Programs. This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Powerful winds and heavy rains are battering the eastern seaboard today as Hurricane Isabel closes in. Meteorologist Dave Jones has the latest from Virginia Beach.
Looking live at the weatherbug stations up and down the East Coast, it looks like winds are gusting right now to 51 miles per hour. In Ocean City, Maryland, that's from the northeast, so they should expect high tides coming with waves of 8 to 12 feet. As we move down the coast towards Hampton Roads, there's just a gust at Hampton, Virginia at 50 miles an hour, and right down at Suffolk, 52 miles per hour. So definitely tropical storm force winds are moving inland. Even out towards Raleigh, North Carolina, winds are gusting now to 41 miles per hour just on the eastern suburbs of Raleigh. We'll continue to monitor the progress of Isabel. It looks like it's going to make a right-hand turn, head towards the Appalachians and up through western Maryland. We'll keep you posted. Tracking Isabel, I'm Weatherbug meteorologist Dave Jones.
Iraq's interim governing council today is urging the United States to loosen its grip on the country in order to end the post-war violence there. The council is calling on Washington to give Iraqis control of their country. The interim president of the council says, quote, problems of security are huge and it is in large measure because Iraqis are not involved in security issues. The military says that two soldiers have been wounded in an attack on a convoy in Baghdad. Their injuries not thought to be very serious. Meanwhile, military officials also say soldiers and air crew have killed 11 Taliban fighters in Afghanistan over the past 3 days. Afghan sources now also say troops have surrounded a van of suspected Afghan rebels. Coalition forces have been engaged in the operation known as Mountain Viper. It was launched last month to root out hundreds of Taliban guerrillas in the Kandahar and Zabul provinces. On the economic front, first-time unemployment claims have dropped sharply for the week ending September 13th. Initial claims fell by 29,000 to 399,000. Economists see a reading below 400,000 as a sign the job market is finally starting to strengthen.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
President Bush is now meeting today with Jordan's King Abdullah at Camp David, Maryland. That summit was moved up a day because of the approach of Hurricane Isabel. Abdullah is meeting with Mr. Bush to try to keep flagging Middle East peace hopes alive. Recently renewed violence has put the so-called roadmap for Middle East peace in serious jeopardy. President Bush says he remains, quote, solidly committed to the latest peace efforts. He also praised recently resigned Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, saying he was undercut by the old order, meaning Palestinian President Yasser Arafat.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
The chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, Richard Grasso, has announced the end of his eight-year term. That announcement came late yesterday, just after the close of the market, following a recent uproar over Grasso's pay package. More from reporter Jeff Weiser.
Richard Grasso, who some called the best chairman in the history of the exchange, found himself in the middle of a big controversy regarding his huge pay package granted by the NYSE board of more than $139 million. On Wednesday, several officials called for his resignation, including State Comptroller Alan Heaven.
And so to have the regulator of the greatest, biggest, most influential stock exchange in the world create the impression of a conflict of interest requires them to move on.
Pevensey said when an official is paid so much money by those he is supposed to regulate, there is an obvious conflict of interest. Jeff Weiser, New York.
Daily operations will now be managed by co-chief operating officers Robert Britz and Catherine Kinney until a permanent replacement is found. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ask Shirley MacLaine, and she may tell you she was Marie Antoinette or even Zeus in another life. Believe that or not, I'll tell you about some real automotive reincarnations when I come back. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You won't need a seance to see where your old car might have gone. Just drive to your new car dealer, because 12 million vehicles were recycled last year. Thanks to Open Loop Recycling, any scrap of steel liquefied in the process melting furnace can be reformed into any shape. That means fenders of old Crown Vicks or Caprices might reincarnate as hoods of brand new Mercedes. And like the mythological Phoenix, steel conquers its trial by fire and is actually strengthened in the recycling process. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the vast, radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman, coast to coast, border to border, on the IE America Radio Network. Boy, everybody is talking about it. What happened? What could have happened? George Bush saying...
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No evidence. The conspiracy theories are flying. They have been trying to set this thing up all this time to say, well, you know, it's all about 9/11. And, of course, nobody has ever actually said it. But 70% of the American people believe that the reason we went into Iraq was 9/11, pure and simple, beginning and end. Yeah, Saddam was a bad guy, quack, 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 quack. Everybody in the United States knows that the planet is full of bad guys, and many of them make Saddam Hussein look like a Boy Scout. So, why, with all this work that has gone into the psyops, the psychological operations, this war or this effort to cause Americans to think that Saddam Hussein was behind 9/11, had something to do with 9/11, and that's why we went into that country. With all the effort that went into that, Dick Cheney on Sunday on TV, again, not, you know, the, Iraq is the epicenter of the region where the 9/11 attacks came from. Condoleezza Rice, same thing. You know, why would George Bush say this? Some folks are speculating that maybe there was some hidden agenda having to do with Iraq, and now it's about to come out, and we're all going to discover that there was a noble purpose. You know, sort of like the Manhattan Project. They couldn't let us know that they were building the bomb until they blew up Japan. And we're about to discover that we're going to invade Saudi Arabia tomorrow morning or something like that. You know, that there's some, you know, other shoe that's going to drop. Some folks are speculating that he finally just decided, hey, it's time you know, to be honest with the American people, help the American people understand reality. Even though his vice president and Condi Rice and Colin Powell and certainly Rumsfeld have all been going out of their way, Powell not so much, but the rest of them certainly going out of their way to convince everybody that Saddam had some, and his speechwriters, I mean, now over the last year from that speech in April, and from many, from several of Bush's speeches, where his speechwriters have carefully organized, talk about Saddam, talk about 9/11, talk about Saddam, talk about 9/11. There's never a connection between the two. You say, well, we know that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, Bush said. And we all remember how terrible 9/11 was, he said. And then he goes, and we know that he has unmanned aerial vehicles. And, you know, and back and forth. And, of course, he never says Saddam had anything to do with 9/11. You know, the speechwriters are very, very careful in crafting these things. But the impression is left. This has been a year-long, more than that, almost a two-year-long, very careful, very methodical, very systematic, very well thought out, very intentional effort to cause Joe Sixpack to think. And you still have, you know, the right wing blather out there trying to convince Joe Sixpack again. You know, don't pay attention to that man behind the curtain that George Bush just let you see a glimpse of. Don't pay attention to that. That, you know, don't even listen to that. No.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th.
No, don't listen to that. Don't listen to that. Now, in fact, instead, listen to what he says afterwards.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th. Now, what the vice president said is that he has been involved with al-Qaeda.
Actually, that's not what the vice president said. You can go back and read the transcript.
And al-Zarqawi, al-Qaeda operative, was in Baghdad.
Yeah, once, several years ago, getting his leg fixed in a hospital, and then he left. He was expelled by Saddam.
The guy that ordered the killing of a U.S. diplomat, he's a man of steel running loose, involved with the poisons network.
Yeah, and they're all still loose. Anyhow, I think, and I may be wrong, maybe some of these folks are right. You know, that either Bush has decided, hey, guys, it's time to come clean. It's time to level with the American people and be honest. Or maybe there is another shoe that's about to drop. I think he just wasn't thinking. I think John King caught him, you know, I mean, CNN has been, ever since he was elected, pretty carefully sucking up to the George Bush administration. They've been very kind to him. When they run his sound bites on TV, they edit them down to take out his gaffes and his ums and his ahs and things. So he looks good. And I think that Bush thought that, I believe it was John King who asked him that question. I think he thought the question was coming from a friend and he would just answer it. This is the reason why George Bush has only had 9 press conferences in his entire presidency in almost 3 years, the fewest number of any president in the history of the United States. The reason why, very simply, because his handlers are scared to death of what will happen. Exactly what happened yesterday. I think he just opened his mouth and spoke what was on the top of his head, which happened to be the truth. I think it's everybody's natural instinct to tell the truth, including George Bush's. In fact, you can, you know, I've noticed when Colin Powell is about to lie, he coughs. It's really interesting. You can notice this. He has a funny cough, and sometimes he just moves his head a little bit to the right. Dick Cheney touches his face. I haven't seen, Don Rumsfeld just seems to, you know, he can just do it, and so can Condi Rice. But I think, you know, I don't think that Bush is all that, frankly, all that sophisticated a liar. I think he reads scripts okay, and, you know, on it goes. So, that's my thoughts on that. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. What are your thoughts on that? Armin in Bradenton, Florida is on the line. What do you think, Armin?
I'd really love to know I'd really like to see the money and just see how much of this black budget CIA money may be going to Fox Network that we don't even realize. And
well, they don't need it. You know, they got Rupert Murdoch behind them.
Yeah, well, if you read
the richest guy in the world.
Did you see biography on Rupert Murdoch?
No, I didn't.
They had a really good thing on him and how he accumulated. Where did he get the money to do his empire building? He went to Vegas.
You kidding?
It was in biography. That's where he raised the money.
Gambling?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Gambling?
No, no, no. They financed him.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So he went. So and then the History Channel had the history of Vegas and how it's so connected to the Mormon Church, and a lot of Mormons worked there. And
it was Mormons and Meyer Lansky and the mob, you know.
And a lot of Mormons.
Interesting.
So, you know, there's a fine line out there. You know, you can step to the left and sin, I guess, and step to the right and be saved.
Yeah.
All in one room.
Remarkable. Remarkable
hey,
stuff.
Hey, I want to say one thing, though.
Okay.
You know the Joe Sixpacks out there?
Yeah.
You know what I think they've been telling them since this rogue administration's been? Don't think for yourself. Just follow the yellow brick road.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, Armand. I appreciate the call and the comment. That's I shouldn't say, Joe, you know, I don't mean that derisively. I really, you know, there are the reality is that most of us in America are so busy just trying to keep food on the table, pay the mortgage, and get by every day that most people don't have the time to really focus on politics. And so they just kind of take what flies by. And in the political circles, they refer to those folks as Joe Sixpack. You know, I think it's just, you know, it's us. It's America. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You are in the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. Our number, if you'd like to call, is 1-800-8-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. In this hour, I want to get into the question, has this Supreme Court abandoned democracy for partisanship? We've got some interesting stuff about what's going on in California, Gore v. Bush, you know, some thoughts on Wesley Clark. A couple of interesting stories here for you. Phil in Florida is on the line, however. Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Phil?
Okay, it's hot and humid here as usual.
Okay.
Listen, has anybody noticed that Donaldson's no longer around?
Oh, he's got a radio program.
Sam Donaldson, remember him?
He's doing a nationally syndicated radio show.
Yeah, well, it's not on. I don't know. It's not on that many stations. I can tell you that. But what my point is this: how many people remember him asking Reagan hard questions?
Oh, it's been a long time since. Yeah, I remember that, and it's been a long time since anybody has been. You know, it's been 3 years since any reporter, because the Bush administration put these guys on notice as soon as they took power. In fact, one of the senior executives at CNN made a. There was an article about this New York Times back right after, you know, in January of 2001, made a pilgrimage to Washington D.C. to assure the Bush administration that they would no longer portray his verbal gaffes in exchange for access. I mean, these guys, Karl Rove plays the access game really well. You saw what happened to Helen Thomas. She's been covering presidents since Truman or Eisenhower. She always sits in the front row. She's the grand dame, the grand old lady of American journalism, and still sharp as a tack, and I think she's pushing 80. And she asked Bush a pointed question a year and a half ago, and boom, they moved her to the back of the room, and he stopped calling on her.
But Sam Donaldson used to be very, very popular. They didn't care if he was asking about Clinton's sex life. But now this guy used to be on Primetime Live. He used to be on the Sunday show. He would be all over, and he's nowhere now. He's off television.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know. I don't know what the situation is, Phil. I can't help.
Well, I think it's no coincidence that with this regime, Sam Donaldson, the guy that used to ask the hard questions, is out of work. In terms of television.
Well, yeah, it could be. I mean, I've heard his radio show, and he's kind of middle of the road on his radio show. He's kind of reincarnated himself as a nice guy who's not real partisan.
But his radio show is not carried by that many stations.
Yeah, well, we get it up here in Vermont. But I think Sam is a good guy. I just, you know, I don't know the vagaries of his career. But, Phil, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. We got Jerry in North Carolina on the line. Jerry, hang on. We'll take your call right after this break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of progressive talk radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kicking off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
the calm before in the Carolinas, they've experienced the calm before the storm. Those of you who are inclined to pray for the safety of others, and presumably have the folks in Iraq on your list, you might want to add the Carolinas to it. Day 220 of the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 734 in the day of, in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, otherwise known as Osama bin Laden. Our quote for the day from President Theodore Roosevelt, spoken on May 7th, 1918, the final year of World War I, he said, "To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we are to stand by the president right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public." End quote. Hans Blick weighed in on the issue of weapons of mass destruction last night. I believe it was an interview with Australian radio. He compared it to the Salem witch trials. I thought this was great. Just listen to this.
Well, they overinterpreted. They wanted to. They were convinced that Saddam was going in this direction. And I think it's understandable against the background of the man that they did so. But, you know, in the Middle Ages, when people were convinced there were witches, and then they looked for them, they certainly found them.
Eureka! Yes, they looked for witches and they found them. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is our number, and Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
The sun's a-shining and it's bright and cheery.
Is it? It is here, too, in the People's Republic of Vermont. It's a beautiful, beautiful day, although I hear we're going to get a little bit of the edge of the hurricane, and I assume it's going to probably hit you first, right?
Well, I live in North Carolina, but I'm presently driving down in Aiken, South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And it's just as bright and pretty as it can be.
Oh, that's great. What's up, Jerry?
Well, I had a question, and I wanted you to make sure I hadn't misinterpreted something. In the last few days, didn't David Kay say that there's probably not going to be any weapons of mass destruction found?
David Kay, just for those of you who aren't familiar with David Kay, the guy that Jerry is referring to, is in Dick Cheney's interview on Sunday, he said he was the former head of UNSCOM, which was a lie, an inaccuracy. David Kay worked for the Atomic Inspector Group there for 1 year, way back in the 90s. And Bush hired, and he was outed as a CIA guy and got Scott Ritter in trouble when they were over there. Anyhow, David Kay was hired by Bush to go over with a team of 1,400 experts to scour the country with virtually unlimited resources and full cooperation of the United States military. And by September 15th, had to submit a full report to the Central Intelligence Agency, to George Tenet, about what he found. And Rumsfeld was over there last week or thereabouts, and this was post September 15. I believe Rumsfeld was there either right on or right after the time that Kay was supposed to submit his report. And a lot of people were speculating that Rumsfeld timed that trip so that he could be there when David Kay presented the report on the assumption that David Kay would have found something. But the report has not been made public. It has been apparently delivered to the CIA. That's what the sources inside the agency are saying. And it apparently says there ain't nothing there, guys. And in fact, it gets deeper and deeper than that, but I don't need to go on and on. Did I answer your question, Jerry?
Yes, you did.
Okay, that's the
situation,
I think. Yeah, okay, thanks for calling. I appreciate the call. Oh, boy. Oh, I'd like to ask for volunteers for something. I have been ranting about these free speech zones where whenever the President of the United States or the Vice President are going to speak somewhere and there may be protesters out on the public streets, they herd them into cages and keep them under police protection so that the TV cameras can't see them. If you are near or in a city where there's going to be a presidential speech, if you're willing to show up in a free speech zone with a cell phone and be our reporter on the scene, I would love to hear from you. Drop into our chat room. Go to TomHartman.com. Let us know. Send me an email. Call 1-800-TALK-YES. Sign up. Let us know. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
The trains will not run on time come October 3rd if six unions at Amtrak have their way. The one-day walkout's being planned to protest congressional inaction on funding for the next fiscal year, which starts next month. The rail service has asked for $1.8 billion of federal support. So far, a Senate committee has recommended $1.3 billion. The unions represent some 8,000 people, nearly 40% of Amtrak's total workforce. Amtrak's lawyers are preparing to file for an injunction in federal court in hopes of stopping the strike.
The Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride kicks off this weekend as caravans prepare to depart from nine American cities to converge on Washington, D.C. early next month. The ride hopes to draw attention to the 29 million immigrants whose labor adds about $10 billion a year to the U.S. economy. Richard Shaw is helping to organize the Houston to Washington, D.C. leg of the Freedom Ride, which he says has three major demands.
We need in this country for undocumented immigrants a legalization and a road to citizenship. Secondly, we need some family reunification laws that will allow immigrants to reunite with their families, and these issues cut across the lines of many immigrant groups. And thirdly, we want strong laws in place that guarantee the right of immigrants in the workplace.
The Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride is modeled after the Freedom Rides of the 1960s, which helped bring legal segregation in the South to a conclusion.
Tough times for the tobacco industry. On Wednesday, R.J. Reynolds announced plans to lay off 2,400 employees. That's 40% of the company. RJR blames a cigarette industry price war for decimating its bottom line and says it will rely more heavily on its parent company, Nabisco, for corporate support services once the downsizing is complete.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Baby, I've been here before. I know this room. I walk this floor. I used to live alone before I knew you.
Oh, welcome back. If I could pick a voice, it would be Leonard Cohen. What an incredible! And I don't know if you've ever seen the old documentary that CBC, Canadian Broadcasting, did on Leonard Cohen's life, and it must have been done at least 20 years ago because it started with him as the young beat poet before he was doing music. When he was like 17, 18 years old and gathering a following in coffee shops in Montreal. And what an amazing man. And in the books of his poetry and his music. Anyhow, but I digress. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. Speaking of Wesley Clark, interesting piece on Common Dreams went up yesterday afternoon right after our show went off. They dug out an old article from the Times of London that Wesley Clark wrote, an op-ed piece, right after the invasion of Iraq right after Baghdad fell, in which he says, well, you know, I don't have it in front of me, so I don't have the exact quotes, but more or less to the effect, he says, well, wasn't it a great thing that we took out Iraq? And yeah, a lot of people were concerned, but isn't it, you know, Blair and Bush should be congratulated for standing firm in the face of all those doubters. Something to the words to that effect. And I read that and I thought, this guy's going to have some problems. But what is Clark's, as I said yesterday, I continue to believe that the fingerprints of Hillary are all over this thing. And that if he gains traction, she gets the vice presidential nomination and she becomes president in 2012, or at least that's her plan. And if he doesn't gain traction, nobody ever knows she had anything to do with it. She comes out unscathed. If Dean wins, then, you know, she can still run in 2012, maybe. And or maybe, you know, who knows, maybe he might, I frankly doubt it, but who knows, nominate her for vice president. And if George Bush wins, then she's got a great shot at the White House in 2008. And there are those who, for a long time, you know, she was sort of supporting John Edwards, and they were saying, oh, she's supporting John Edwards because she knows he can't win, and that's why she's encouraging him to stay in the race, and she's pushing, you know, I don't know. On some days of the week, I think that maybe Hillary is just another politician. I'm not saying this because she's Bill Clinton's wife or because she's female, but some days I think that she's just another politician. Other days I think she's really an extraordinary person who has served her country and has a passion for democracy and for America. And I frankly haven't completely figured it all out yet. But the effect of Dean, of Clark, in this campaign, I think is first of all, it's going to primarily help, in my opinion, Howard Dean. Because Howard Dean is, you know, he gets, his main traction on the left has been that he opposed the Iraq War. But in the middle, in the vast radical middle, there have been a lot of people who have been saying, well, I don't know, maybe the war was a good thing. I mean, for them, it's the outcome. These are the people who still believe that we went to war in Iraq because Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. Remember, that's 70% of Americans? And for them, they look at Howard Dean and they say, what, he didn't want to go after the guy who hit our towers on 9/11? Give me a break. And, of course, that's the way that the right-wing talk shows and whatnot have been spinning it and the innuendo that they've been trying to put out and the faux news stuff. So now a five-star general comes along, former supreme allied commander of NATO, the same job that Dwight Eisenhower held, Wesley Clark, and he says, yeah, the war was a bad idea, shouldn't have done it. And all of a sudden, Howard Dean gets credibility. So I think he's actually going to help Howard Dean. And it also is going to draw media attention. You'll recall two, three days ago, most of the political media attention was about attacks on Howard Dean. And now they've got somebody new to attack. They've got Wesley Clark. And boy, the right-wing hit machine is going after him so hard, so fast, as they will anybody. I mean, these guys, they take no prisoners. So I think that this could be a good thing. The other thing that I find interesting is that most people who are speaking out, who have worked with Clark, even those who like him, who think he would make a good president, talk about how he's never really developed good friends in the military, or how he can be autocratic and he can be domineering, but he's so bright that people put up with him anyway. And that sounds to me like a description of Gray Davis. I wonder, they kind of look alike in some ways, I suppose. I wonder if Wesley Clark is going to have the Gray Davis problem. You know, he's a nice guy. He's a very smart man. He knows policy. He really believes in what he's doing. He's trying to do the best thing, but he just doesn't come across as likable. So it'll be interesting to see. Be real interesting to see. In the meantime, we find that what's going on in Iraq and what's going on with this stuff in Iraq. In the next hour, I want to get into the California Bush thing. In our third hour, we're going to have a fellow on, the author, a fascinating guy, Paul Sperry. He's the Washington bureau chief for WorldNetDaily.com, which is a conservative website. And he wrote a book called Crude Politics. This guy is a conservative. And the subtitle of his book is How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. And he's really done his homework. That's going to be in the third hour in our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. That's going to be a real interesting one. So back to this. How badly will Bush's folly, and I think we ought to start calling this Bush's folly, how badly will Bush's folly in Iraq harm America today and in our future generations? Well, first of all, we've got now conservatives coming out against that. You know, you've all seen the moderate Republican Chuck Hagel, who I have some doubts about since he used to be the president of an electronic voting machine company, quit his job as the CEO of the voting machine company to run in Nebraska for the United States Senate, and all the votes were counted by the machines that were owned by his company, and I just, you know, and he didn't disclose that, and I have some problems with that personally. I'm not suggesting there's a conspiracy. I think it just stinks. But in any case, although his former opponent, Charlie Matulka, who has been a guest on this program, is aggressively trying to audit those elections and is being stopped. You know, the Republicans control that state now, and they're just saying, no way, we're not going to allow you to look back on the election. We're going to get into that kind of stuff in the second hour, when we ask, has this Supreme Court abandoned democracy for partisanship? But now we have these conservatives, a conservative Democrat, yeah, but a conservative. I started out with Chuck Hagel. We saw Chuck Hagel the other day criticizing the war. He's been speaking out on it. In my opinion, this is because Chuck Hagel wants to be the next Republican president of the United States. Mark my words. And in the meantime, Democrats like John Murtha. John Murtha, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, this guy's been around forever. He was the very first Vietnam veteran to serve in the United States Congress. So you can get a sense of how long he's been there. He won the Purple Heart. He was awarded the Purple Heart. And he accepted blame for believing, this is from The Hill, a great publication, kind of an insider publication in Washington, D.C. He said he accepted blame for believing the administration's intelligence assessments last fall. Quote, I am part of it. I made the mistake, he said. John Murtha, ranking member of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee, this is the guy that Bush's $87 billion request has to get passed. And so what does he have to say about this situation? He's got some.
The administration is the one that is responsible for foreign policy. They're the ones that tell the Defense Department, in all the 30 years that I've been here, I've never known the Defense Department to run foreign policy. I've never known the Defense Department to make policy. It's the President of the United States and the people in the White House that make the foreign policy.
This is part of a rather long discussion that he had, but basically he was saying, on the one hand, you got a president who doesn't seem to be making foreign policy. It seems like Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and these guys are making foreign policy, and that's wrong. And then on the other hand, he's saying, and we should hold the president accountable, or he should hold these guys accountable. Somebody has to be accountable. It just continues for a little bit here.
The White House got to make that decision. They're the ones that ultimately make the decision. Wolfowitz can make a recommendation. They make the decision
about whether or not to go to war. So what do we do?
You can't fire the president unless you're in California. I mean, what I'm saying is we're not going to turn this policy around unless the president, somebody recommended this policy to him. He took the recommendation. So somebody has to be held responsible, and he's got to make the decision who it was.
Yeah, this is Murtha saying heads must roll. Interesting. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, and Peter B. Collins, Peter B. Collins, the host of the All-American Talk Radio, I assume, is on the line. Peter, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Hey, Peter, I'm great. I had a great time on your program, and here you are on mine. What's up?
Well, I just got myself a Sirius satellite radio, and I'm driving around listening to Tom Hartman, and I just wanted to let you know it all works.
Oh, isn't that cool? Yeah, you know, it's that's going to be an interesting thing to see how it plays out too, because I've talked to a couple of radio station owners in the last few weeks. We've had a couple more stations pick up this show, and there are some people out there who are very in the radio business who are very concerned about and upset about Sirius, and then there are other people who think that it might be a good thing for the industry. It might really revive it. And, you know, a lot of debate and discussion, but it is there, and we're on Sirius Stream 145 on the Sirius satellite radio system, and very grateful to be on. I think it's a great product. We have one, my wife and I.
Well, this is one of those cases where I embrace the free market, and I think that competition can only be good for the consolidated American radio industry. And if what we do causes the Clear Channels and Infinities to say, huh, maybe we've missed something, then that can only be a good thing. In terms of the smaller operators who still remain in the consolidated world, I'm rooting for them to hang on, and, you know, we might be part of the solution for them.
Well, see,
I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things you mentioned in the last 20 minutes or so. One is about Hillary, and the other is I'd love to get your Vermonter's view of Governor Dean. To Hillary Rodham Clinton, I'm one of those people who is really hoping that she doesn't run. And, you know, the hinting is getting louder and louder that she's willing to repudiate her promise not to run for president. And I just think that while she has good name recognition and she does show up in the polls as a Democrat who could give Bush a run for his $200 million, I think that she would be a target more than a leader, and I also feel that she has yet to distinguish herself in the United States Senate.
Yeah, that's why I think that if she's going to be in this race, I thought it was very telling when Bill Clinton at that party last week made the comment to somebody that you may see one or maybe even two new candidates emerging. I think that she's pushing, or she's encouraging. I don't think that this is her. I think Wesley Clark made the decision on his own, and he's a big boy, and he can do all this kind of stuff. But I think that the Clintons are telling him, you know, run, do as well as you can, in the hopes, or maybe even the prearranged conclusion, that Hillary will be his running mate. Then she can be vice president for 4 years or 8 years and have an opportunity to demonstrate to America that she's not, you know, the wicked witch of the West or whatever kind of stereotypes the right wingers want to paint her with, and you know, get some national exposure for actually doing things.
Well, and I have this resistance to dynasty politics. You know, we're now on our second Bush, and I just think that there are plenty of great potential leaders in America, and they don't have to have the last name Clinton.
Yeah, we're on the 15th year of the Bush dynasty, actually. You know, eight years with Bush Sr. Running the White House as Reagan was becoming progressively more demented, 4 years where he ran it all by himself, and now this guy.
So with the entry of General Clark, you know, there are some interesting dynamics that surface here. Tell me a little bit about your Vermonter's view of Governor Dean, because I guess one of the things that I'm a little wary of is these pro-gun Democrats, and both Clark and Dean are strong defenders of the Second Amendment, and they also are hoping to garner support from the NRA. And I feel that this is one of the failings of the Gore campaign in 2000, is that their polling showed that these so-called office park dads support gun rights and are opposed to reasonable gun control. And I think that the Democratic Party would benefit by embracing reasonable gun control and not sending these messages that essentially say there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans on guns.
Peter, Dean's position on that is a little different. Dean is saying that it's up to the states. So he's not saying, yes, gung-ho, Second Amendment, no matter what, you know, everybody should be able to have an assault weapon. He's saying it's just fine if New York wants to have very, very tight gun controls. He doesn't consider that a violation of the Second Amendment. So he's not one of those NRA you know, gung-ho, it's this way and the only way. You know, it's not like a religion with him. But, you know, here in Vermont, we have virtually no gun control because hunting is the second or third largest industry in this state. We got 87,000 people came to Vermont last year just to hunt deer in the fall. And so, you know, it's gun control here, and there's not much of a need for it. I mean, the last four people who have died in the state of Vermont, or from the state of Vermont, have all died in Iraq. Honest to God, the last four people who have died who are citizens of Vermont as a result of weapons. So that's his position, and I think he's got a good one. Peter, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Presenting the new Radio Shack MasterCard credit card. With a 9.9% APR for purchases and a 0% introductory APR for balance transfers, it's a cool card that helps you earn reward points toward cool stuff like a complete home digital imaging system. Plus, earn reward points everywhere and get double points at participating Radio Shack stores. Apply now at Radio Shack. For information about rates, fees, features, and benefits associated with use of this credit card, see a Radio Shack store associate for details.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Boy, I can't believe I didn't do it. I really missed the boat. Interest rates were at historic lows. I knew the economy was turning around. I could have called General Steel and saved a ton of money on the building I needed, and I'd be ready for the new economy. Yep, I really blew it.
Will this be you? Perhaps a year from now. Let General Steel Corporation show you how to take advantage of this unique moment in history. A steel building from the General will save you time and money compared to conventional construction. And you can hold your building delivery for up to 1 year with a small deposit. Small business owners know that now is the best time to build and prepare for the new economy. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $15,000 or 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need manufacturing or warehouse space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. This moment in history won't last forever. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
The Tom Hartman Show.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board.
The doorbell rang and I answered the door. Just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush, what a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary. How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect.
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. The Virginia Bill of Rights. Thomas Jefferson helped write this. We're talking about Peter B. Collins of the Peter B. Collins Show, All American Talk Radio, raised the question of gun control. And a lot of people wonder where the Second Amendment came from. And one of the myths in America is that the Second Amendment was written because the founders wanted to be sure that everybody had a gun so that if the government ever got out of line, we could have a revolution and go, you know, attack the government. And in fact, that's nonsense. If that had been what they would have wanted, the Second Amendment would have said, you have the right to bear cannons, because that was the state of the military art at the time. You have the right to own battleships. Or today, the Supreme Court would be deciding, you have the right to have surface-to-air missiles or nuclear bombs. The Virginia Declaration of Rights, which preceded the Bill of Rights, it was written a year or two before. Here's what it says. That standing armies in time of peace should be avoided as dangerous to liberty. See, they didn't want there to be an army during time of peace because armies could rise up and take over a nation from within. That standing armies in time of peace should be avoided as dangerous to the military, and therefore that a well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people trained to arms is the proper, natural, and safe defense of a free state. You get it? Now, that language got, you know, run through a committee and came out as the Second Amendment, which says a well-regulated militia being essential to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Their idea was to create a Swiss-style army, that every person in America, every able-bodied man at least in America, would be a member of a local militia that would report to a county militia, that would report to a state militia, and if the United States was ever attacked, just like in Switzerland, everybody would grab their gun, step out into the street, and boom, you'd have an instant army. And the whole point of the Second Amendment was to say that the founders, and this was a big debate among them, didn't want there to be a standing army during times of peace. So I just want to clarify that for you. Anyhow, we'll be back. We're going to get into this election stuff. Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You
why
hate
don't
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Powerful winds and heavy rains are battering the eastern seaboard today as Hurricane Isabel closes in. Meteorologist Dave Jones has the latest from Virginia Beach.
Looking live at the weatherbug stations up and down the East Coast, it looks like winds are gusting right now to 51 miles per hour. In Ocean City, Maryland, that's from the northeast, so they should expect high tides coming with waves of 8 to 12 feet. As we move down the coast towards Hampton Roads, there's just a gust at Hampton, Virginia at 50 miles an hour, and right down at Suffolk, 52 miles per hour. So definitely tropical storm force winds are moving inland. Even out towards Raleigh, North Carolina, winds are gusting out of 41 miles per hour just on the eastern suburbs of Raleigh. We'll continue to monitor the progress of Isabel. It looks like it's going to make a right-hand turn, head towards the Appalachians and up through western Maryland. We'll keep you posted. Tracking Isabel, I'm Weatherbug meteorologist Dave Jones.
Iraq's interim governing council today is urging the United States to loosen its grip on the country in order to end the post-war violence there. The council is calling on Washington to give Iraqis control of their country. The interim president of the council says, quote, problems of security are huge and it is in large measure because Iraqis are not involved in security issues. The military says that two soldiers have been wounded in an attack on a convoy in Baghdad. Their injuries not thought to be very serious. Meanwhile, military officials also say soldiers and air crew have killed 11 Taliban fighters in Afghanistan over the past 3 days. Afghan sources now also say troops have surrounded a band of suspected Afghan rebels. Coalition forces have been engaged in the operation known as Mountain Viper. It was launched last month to root out hundreds of Taliban guerrillas in the Kandahar and Zabul provinces. On the economic front, first-time unemployment claims have dropped sharply for the week ending September 13th. Initial claims fell by 29,000 to 399,000. Economists see a reading below 400,000 as a sign the job market is finally starting to strengthen.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... but on the inside, I'm all... just because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
President Bush is now meeting today with Jordan's King Abdullah at Camp David, Maryland. That summit was moved up a day because of the approach of Hurricane Isabel. Abdullah is meeting with Mr. Bush to try to keep flagging Middle East peace hopes alive. Recently renewed violence has put the so-called roadmap for Middle East peace in serious jeopardy. President Bush says he remains, quote, solidly committed to the latest peace efforts. He also praised recently resigned Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, saying he was undercut by the old order, meaning Palestinian President Yasser Arafat.
Presenting the new Radio Shack MasterCard credit card. With a 9.9% APR for purchases and a 0% introductory APR for balance transfers. It's a cool card that helps you earn reward points toward cool stuff, like a complete home digital imaging system. Plus, earn reward points everywhere and get double points at participating Radio Shack stores. Apply now at Radio Shack. For information about rates, fees, features, and benefits associated with use of this credit card, see a Radio Shack store associate for details.
The chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, Richard Grasso, has announced the end of his 8-year term. That announcement came late yesterday, just after the close of the market, following a recent uproar over Grasso's pay package. More from reporter Jeff Weiser.
Richard Grasso, who some called the best chairman in the history of the exchange, found himself in the middle of a big controversy regarding his huge pay package granted by the NYSE board of more than $139 million. On Wednesday, several officials called for his resignation, including State Comptroller Alan Hedges.
And so to have the regulator of the greatest, biggest, most influential stock exchange in the world create the impression of a conflict of interest requires him to move on.
Hevesy said when an official is paid so much money by those he is supposed to regulate, there is an obvious conflict of interest. Jeff Weiser, New York.
Daily operations will now be managed by co-chief operating officers Robert Britz and Catherine Kinney until a permanent replacement is found. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Cucumbers, jazz, Gwyneth Paltrow, and khakis. Speaking of cool things, I'm stacking up for the summer. Don't sweat it. When I come back, I'll tell you how to chill out. We've all seen the tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your tornado unit today. Or visit tornadoair.com. It's hot, and you're working hard. You can't go another foot till you cool off. Aha, now you know how your car feels. In fact, overheating's the number one cause of breakdowns. Like our bodies have a cooling system, cars do too. They rely on radiators to keep their engines from boiling over. To properly cool, these systems must be maintained with correct proportions and levels of coolant water mixture. So this summer, think cool, calm, and collect the money saved by radiator check. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman putting the con back into conservative, where it belongs. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network. Broadcasting on the Sirius satellite system, satellite radio system, stream 145. Streaming live on the internet, ieamericaradio.com, radiopower.org, live365.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And you can find all of that stuff at tomhartman.com. Links to it, as well as to our chat room, where you will find the most intelligent, insightful, and erudite conversation available on the internet today when our program is live. I encourage you to drop in. Our quote from the day from President Theodore Roosevelt, May 7th, 1918, the last year of the First World War, what was then referred to as the Great War. Teddy Roosevelt said, "To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we are to stand by the president right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, it is morally treasonable to the American public." Don't you wish Don Rumsfeld would read Teddy Roosevelt once in a while? It's just... So what's in California now? I want to get into this because a lot of people are just absolutely confused about it. I know I was until I did some digging. You know, what's the deal with this this appeals court or the Ninth Circuit Court? And they're saying, well, we're going to toss it back to the Supreme Court based on Bush v. Gore. And, of course, there may be a pause in that because this was I believe that there's 12 judges on the full court, and only three of them made this decision. So now there's this movement, the petition that the entire court is going to look at it, as I understand. But it's probably going to end up before the Supreme Court, or it may. And they're saying this is what the three judges wrote. Plaintiffs claim, this is, you know, the ACLU, saying that the ACLU is basically saying there. Now, in the faux press, in the faux news press, it's being presented as that they don't want them to use these voting machines because they might be unreliable. Well, really, the problem is that a punch card ballot doesn't have room on one card for 145 names. So you would have to give each person two cards and hope that they put them in the right order, one after the other, and push the right button on each one. And the odds of that happening consistently, even with perfectly intelligent people who are just, you know, busy, moving quickly, whatever, the odds of that happening are pretty slim. And so the ACLU is saying, hey, you know, these machines, they might have worked fine in the last election. Or maybe not. I mean, who knows? But, you know, nobody was complaining about them. But we didn't have 145 people running. There's not that many little holes that you can punch. And so you're going to have two or three cards. And that is going to create confusion that is going to disenfranchise voters. I think it's very strange how the right-wingers never talk about this, that this is the issue. They always try to portray it as, liberals, they just don't want people to vote because they're just making excuses. They're saying it's the voting machines, and they think that people are too dumb to use them, and they go through all these verbal and intellectual contortions. But anyway, the court says plaintiffs claim, this is the ACLU, the ACLU's claim that that if you want to have a real election, you should have it in a way that people can really vote. Plaintiff's claim presents almost precisely the same issue as the court considered in Bush v. Gore. That is, whether unequal methods of counting votes among counties constitutes a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. Now here, let me explain this. In Bush v. Gore, the Equal Protection Clause is the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment says, no person shall be denied equal protection under the law. Which means that if something's done, some legal standard is applied in one area, it has to apply across the board. Broadly speaking. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not trying to teach you about the law, as it were, but in my understanding of this. And so what they're saying is that, you know, that in California, they're saying some districts have punch card machines where you're going to have these two or three different cards you're going to have to put into the machines in series and figure out which button to push. And maybe you won't even punch a button on one card because, you know, and other counties have electronic voting machines. And there might even be some places they're still using paper. I doubt it, but it would be nice. And they're saying, you know, until we get this some level of standardization to prevent the maniac confusion that would be caused by people having multiple cards with punch card things, you know, we need to clean this up. The three judges said this is the same argument that was used by George Bush when he tried to stop the count of the vote in Florida. And the three judges continue to write, in Bush, the Supreme Court held that using different standards for counting votes in different counties across Florida violated the Equal Protection Clause. Now, I read that and I thought, that's really interesting. That's not what I got out of Bush v. Gore. And so I went back. I spent the morning here today reading the United States Supreme Court decision. Interesting thing I discovered, it's a little bit off topic, but it's fascinating. There was another Supreme Court case in June of 1996 called Bush, Governor of Texas versus Vera. And apparently, I'll just read you the abstract. Because the 1990 census revealed a population increase entitling Texas to three additional congressional seats, okay, more people were in Texas,
Therefore, they could get more seats in Congress. And in an attempt to comply with the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which requires that minorities be appropriately represented, the Texas legislature promulgated a redistricting plan that, among other things, created District 30 as a new majority African-American district in Dallas County and District 29 as a new majority Hispanic district in Harris County and reconfigured District 18, which is adjacent to District 29, as a majority African-American district. In other words, they were doing this, the legislature did this, in order to make the representation in Washington accurately reflect the cultural and racial makeup of Dallas. And the governor of Texas, George Bush, private interveners, and the United States as intervener appealed. And I thought that was an interesting case. I didn't know that Bush had taken and this is, this is about redistricting. That what they were trying to do in 1996 was rewrite the 1990, see, every year that ends with a zero, 1990, 2000, 2010 in Texas, they redistrict. All over the country. You know, that's when the census comes out, and your districts are based on the census. But in 1996, apparently, the Republicans wanted to change things, and so they went to the Supreme Court. Of course, they're doing the same thing again in Texas, but I digress. Let me get back to this Bush v. Gore thing here. And I just wanted to share with you the details of this, not at the level of maniac detail, but some detail. Although Jim in Oklahoma is on the line and he wants to, voting machine, yeah, let's get on to this. Jim, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, and Jim has called it. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, Jim.
I'd like to talk about Wes Clark. I think that, I believe George Bush and Dick Cheney put that comment out there about Iraq, because I believe that Dean and Clark and others would probably make that a huge issue during the elections. And I kind of believe it said, we talked about that. You know, we said that we weren't in there, that we agreed that there are no weapons in there. So, that's off the table. So I think it's done to prevent a confrontation with Bush, I think.
Do you think it was a preemptive strike? If that was the case, then why did Condi Rice on Tuesday night and Dick Cheney on Sunday say the exact opposite?
Well, now that I don't know. I didn't see her. I didn't see that at all. I just saw Cheney. I heard Cheney and heard Bush yesterday say that. So that's my take on it. But on the voting, I kind of believe if Bush really wanted fair elections, he could easily say, I demand voting machines that would count accurately. But I haven't seen him say anything like that. So it kind of makes me wonder, how fair of an election he really wants, And I'll hang up and let you comment. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for calling and thanks for your comment. I frankly doubt that George Bush is... I is at working at the level of voting machines. I'm not a subscriber to there's a right-wing voting machine company conspiracy to take over the electoral process. I am a subscriber to the theory that these voting machines are being promoted because they make money. The HAVA Act, Help America Vote Act, allocated $4 billion to the states to buy voting machine companies from private corporations who donate lots of money to political candidates, particularly Republicans. And in fact, the head of Diebold, or Diebold, however you say it, signed this fundraising letter in Ohio saying that he was committed to re-electing George Bush as president of the United States in 2004. And so, I think it's a rush to money, frankly. And we talked with Rush Holt about this a couple days ago, Representative Rush Holt. So, anyhow, counting every legally cast vote can constitute irreparable harm was the, I'm looking at, the, this is, I'm quoting from the George W. Bush et al. Versus Albert Gore Jr. et al. Keep in mind, George Bush sued Al Gore before the Supreme Court. Somehow, the cons have spun this around. A lot of people think that Al Gore was the one who took this to the Supreme Court. Not the case. George Bush sued. And what he... And what he was saying, and I'm quoting this is the original, application on for stay that stopped the vote in Florida. And the Supreme Court, this is from Justice Scalia,
says, and he starts out quoting from George Bush's petition. He says, counting every legally cast vote can constitute irreparable harm. End quote. That from Bush. In other words, Bush's claim was that if every legally cast vote in the state of Florida was counted, it would irreparably harm him. That was the argument that was made before the United States Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore. Those of you who've read the argument and read the case know this, and those of you who read the newspapers carefully back then know this. I think a lot of people don't know this. And it's just remarkable where this goes and how this spins back around to right now. And let me bring you to that right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle.
I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
a good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Rural people and local officials have long complained to the Environmental Protection Agency about the sickening air and water pollution coming from the massive corporate hog factories that have sprung up all across the country. And now, by gollies, George W. Bush's EPA is listening to the polluters. These hog factories are huge, cramming tens of thousands of hogs inside and channeling hog urine and feces into open-air cesspools the size of football fields. Oh, the stink. Think of rancid roadkill mixed with overloaded porta-potty on a hot day. It's a knee-buckling, mind-melting, pass-out stink. But the stench is not just an odor. It's a substance. In particular, it's fecal dust. And hundreds of tons of these invisible hog stuff particles drift through the air for residents of the area to breathe. Scientific studies now are proving that the stink is poisonous, ruining people's health. Instead of enforcing existing laws or enacting stronger protections for people, however, the Bushites closeted themselves with industry lobbyists, privately negotiating on a proposal written by the polluters themselves. Hold your nose, because the plan agreed to by Bush and Company is even stinkier than hog stuff. One, the corporate hog factories are to be given amnesty for any past violations of the Clean Air Act, even violations that poison people. Two, the EPA will pursue no new cases against polluters, and control of factory farm pollution will be moved from EPA's enforcement professionals to its political office. Three, in exchange for this get-out-of-jail-free card, the industry agrees to have its pollution monitored by EPA on a voluntary basis. But only 30 of the thousands of hog factories will be monitored, and even if they're found to be rank violators of the law, they'll not have to make changes in their practices.
This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight bush stink, call Grace Factory Farm Project at 212-726-9161.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
On the IE America Radio Network, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Counting every legally cast vote can constitute irreparable harm, said George Bush in 2000. They can't count all those votes in Florida. It would irreparably harm him. Irreparable harm. One of the principal issues, I'm reading now from Justice Antonin Scalia, one of the principal issues in the appeal we have accepted is precisely whether the votes that have been ordered to be counted are, under a reasonable interpretation of Florida law, legally cast votes. The counting of votes that are of questionable legality does, in my view, threaten irreparable harm to petitioner and to the country by casting a cloud upon what he claims to be the legitimacy of his election. Count first and rule upon legality afterwards is not a recipe for producing election results that have the public acceptance democratic stability requires. End quote. So Scalia says, in Bush v. Gore, that we shouldn't count first and then determine whether the count was legal or the vote was done fairly on machines that were appropriately designed or accessible or you know, how many cards people had to have, whatever. He says, instead, you simply have the vote. Oh, I'm sorry. He says, instead, you decide the legality, and then you decide whether or not to recount. And Justice Stevens, Souter, Ginsburg, and Breyer dissented, and Justice Stevens wrote the dissent. He said, the majority has acted unwisely. A stay should not be granted unless an applicant makes a substantial showing of a likelihood of irreparable harm. In this case, applicants have failed to carry that heavy burden. Counting every legally cast vote cannot constitute irreparable harm. On the other hand, there is a danger that a stay may cause irreparable harm to the respondents. In other words, if we pause the count, it might harm George Bush and Al Gore, the respondents, and more importantly, the public at large, because of the risk that the entry of the stay would be tantamount to a decision on the merits in favor of the applicants. In other words, because if we stop this count right now, we've essentially thrown this election to George Bush. And, of course, that's what they did. And that's what happened. Now, another interesting thing you'll find in Bush v. Gore, this is just a little sidelight here. You'll find it in Section 2, Section Part B of Section 2, from the majority opinion, per curiam. This is the majority of the court speaking. The individual citizen, and I quote, the individual citizen has no federal constitutional right to vote for electors for the President of the United States. End quote. So those are the two really interesting things. Now, in the rebuttal or in the dissent, again in the main decision, this was let's see who wrote this. Justice Breyer said, by halting the manual recount and thus ensuring that the uncounted legal votes will not be counted under any standard, this court crafts a remedy out of proportion to the asserted harm. The manual recount would itself redress a problem of unequal treatment of ballots. So he's saying, of course, you know, we should have allowed Florida to continue with the recount. So that was those were the issues in Bush v. Gore. Now let's see how this thing... Well, first of all, I want to share with you just one final little bit about how this the twist of how this all ended up. And then we'll get to California. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Lewis and Clark kept meticulous records of their expedition. Their journals show North America in its natural state. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Next year marks the 200th anniversary of the Lewis and Clark expedition, and a new abridged version of the Explorer's Journals depicts their crossing of the continent in their own words. University of Nebraska historian Gary Moulton edited the Lewis and Clark Journals. He says the writings have always been a trove of information for environmental historians. Moulton says William Clark and Meriwether Lewis were instructed by President Thomas Jefferson to bring back a complete picture of the nature of the West.
They were keenly interested in the natural world, not only Lewis and Clark, but they had directions from Jefferson as well to keep up the researches and the discoveries they're collecting in these areas.
Lewis sent back animal hides, horns, and skeletons during the expedition, but Moulton says his collection and preservation of plants was especially valuable and reflected Jefferson's keen interest in their potential medicinal value and native ceremonial uses. Botanists still work with Lewis's 200-year-old specimens.
There's quite a bit of detective work. Lewis was not only describing the plants, but he was also collecting them. So in many instances, we have the specimen right there today to look at. And botanists can take small cuttings or do intricate investigations of these plants, DNA analysis or whatever, and they can discover exactly what plant it is.
Moulton says the explorers also described grizzly bears, prairie dogs, and other animals not known in the East. He says Lewis and Clark's work as naturalists was among their most valuable contributions. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And the beat goes on. The beat goes on. The drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La-da-da-da-dee. La-da-da-da-dee.
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. wild things going on down in Florida in 2000. Is it about to happen again in California? Here's just, there's a movie about out about this that I highly recommend. It's called Unprecedented. If you watch it through, you'll see me at the last, at the end of it. So I'm sort of, to let you know up front, I'm waving a flag that I don't get anything out of it. But, you know, it's kind of cool being in one of these movies. But here's a little clip from this movie. It's called Unprecedented. Unprecedented.org is the website. You can get it on Amazon or in any, you know, movie store. It's out on CD right now. And just what happened in Florida, just so we remember, this is even beyond the what was the count like. There was other stuff that old Jeb and Catherine had going.
Statewide, we had complaints of everything from police intimidation, police threatening people with tickets for loitering who happen to be standing in line. We've had reports of people being required to produce multiple pieces of identification when they have a valid voter registration card. There's no such requirement under Florida law.
Many more irregularities were confirmed when the NAACP held hearings a few days after the election.
I showed the poll worker my identification, and he looked at the roll, and he looked at me, and he said, "We have a problem. You're not on the roll." I did nothing wrong. I voted in that roll, but I was not on that roll, and I was not allowed to vote.
These irregularities were reported throughout the state.
This was when they were just discovering that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush had pulled the scam of the century by knocking 90,000, more or less, African-American voters off the rolls in advance of the election to rig the election to make sure that Jeb would get reelected and George would win the state. And, of course, they were successful. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jody in Arlington Heights, Illinois, is on the line. Jody, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. I originally had a full printout of this decision, which was rather lengthy with all the dissents. But I thought in the original majority opinion, there was something in there that said, I'm trying to go through it now, which is not working too well, that they were saying this was a, I don't remember the wording exactly, but there was something
unique to this case.
Said you cannot use this case. It's a unique situation.
Right.
And that they were basically, you know, saying you cannot use this as precedent.
Right. Yeah. It's
which
in
is
there.
Why, you know, that's their out. I mean, the California court, I don't care what, you know, whatever they're doing, if it get, to me, if it goes to the Supreme Court, they're going to say, too bad. You know, we're not using it as precedent.
Isn't that the height of hypocrisy?
And well, yeah, but I'm not sure. You know, I'm trying to find it as I'm whipping through. Did you notice it at all? I mean, I'm not sure that it was there now. I'm like, looking for it.
Yes, yeah, it is in there. I have to stop talking right now to read for it. But, yes, it is definitely in there. There is a phrase in there that essentially says, this case is not establishing precedent.
Right.
It doesn't say it in those words, but it says
that.
That
is a legal, because, you know, the legal term is called stare decisis, which means that, you know, that means a case that went before is always used as precedent. And you'll see that any Supreme Court case after that has to make a distinction if they're going to rule differently. It'll be either on the facts or, you know, some other reason. Usually it's on the facts. This is why we see it different than this case, which they then will cite. And that's the difference. And for them to say that, I've never heard that. And that was, to me, really out of this whole thing, the most shocking, because I knew that meant, this means that anybody tries to come up with saying, hey, this is what you said in this case, they'll just say, no, we don't care.
That was the thing that caused a lot of people to say, this is a political decision, and the court is essentially admitting it by saying that we are going to use this to support George. See, the situation was, when you can't win an election in Florida, and it looked like maybe they wouldn't win. And I'll give you the details on that in just a second. If it looks like you can't win the election, then you go running to your buddies at the Supreme Court to ignore the will of the people, you know, to thwart the will of the people. And the court was saying, we're going to do this argument, we're going to take this decision in this case to support George, but don't ever try to use this, you know, if there ever is a Democratic majority in this court, they can't use this same decision again the same way.
Well, and I'm saying that because I'm assuming, since this is the only case, let's say, that's like this in their, you know, history, in the U.S. Supreme Court's history, how can they take it? Because they can't, you know, they'll have to decide it completely without any fallback on that case. So they are now free to decide the California case however they wish.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen, in my feeling. And they'll decide it so that, no, get going, do this election now.
Yeah, that's my guess, too. That's my guess, too.
You know,
it's interesting.
Even if it gets that far, it might not get past, you know, well, I'm assuming the other side will then go to the Supreme Court, but I don't think I would. You know, it's not worth it in some respects, but other than to make them look like hypocrites, which they will be. But,
and you know, there were these multiple levels of deceit going on. I mean, there was the thing with the Supreme Court, and then there was the egregious one with Catherine Harris hiring a Texas Republican affiliated Texas company for millions of dollars when the state had never paid more than a few hundred dollars to check its voter roll to come in and purge all of the people using the Texas felon list to purge the voter rolls in Florida because minorities very often is one of the legacies of slavery is that a lot of African Americans have very similar names. And so they purged the rolls and bumped 90,000 people off, disproportionately African Americans and largely Democratic districts. And people are saying, well, you know, well, if that's really true, how come Catherine Harris didn't go to jail? Well, Catherine Harris is in Congress now, and she continues to defend this.
Right.
I mean, nobody on the right, none of the Republicans are saying this didn't happen.
No, the other thing they try to leave off of that argument, too, is which, if you read Greg Palast's book, which is, and this is true because I know I'm an Illinois resident, and in Illinois, we have a certain length of time, and then a person who's convicted of a crime can then vote. So if this person was convicted in Illinois but became a Florida resident, Florida does not have the right, under the full faith and credit of the state, you know, they do not have the right to say, oh, because you're from Illinois, your case was in Illinois, but now you're living in Florida, you're under our law as a convict. You're not. You're under the law where you were convicted.
Right, but Jody, this thing got litigated in Florida, and they came in and they said, okay, what percentage of the people who got, of those 90,000 people who got bumped off the rolls, what percentage of them were actually Florida felons?
Right, and they didn't.
And what percentage do you think it was?
A very small percentage.
It was 3%.
Right, it was tiny. And this is what I'm saying, you know, but I've had a right-winger just last week say something like, well, they have the right to not let convicts vote. And I said,
well, they do. If the state passes that law, they do have that right.
Right, and that's part of the person doesn't have. I mean, unfortunately, you know, many of the cases where you know that first paragraph where you said, oh, they don't have the right to, you know, it says they do not have a constitutional right to vote.
Well, that says none of us do.
And those were used quite often. The court, you know, the Supreme Court, there's a number of cases on that.
Yeah. Well, Jody, that particular case was that we don't have the right to vote for electors for the presidency.
Right.
Way back, we do have the right to vote for congressmen and senators and things like that. But, you know, the Electoral College was set up. Originally, the Electoral College decisions were made by the legislatures of the states, voted on the, you know, on the nominated the electors. In fact, they still do.
Right.
But very early on, there was a big discussion about should the people even be voting for who the electors should be. You know?
Right.
Set it up so it could go either way.
And a lot of times that's what the core of what they said, and, you know, I've heard this bandied about, but I've looked up a number of cases. It was often used to disenfranchise minorities.
Sure. Yeah.
To say, oh, you don't have the right, you know, we can set whatever criteria we want, so you don't have the right to vote. You don't for an elector.
Yep.
And that was one of the major, you know, issues in that. And I mean, technically, that is correct. But, you know, every other law that's been written, you know, the amendments obviously indicate, you know, you have a right to vote. But
well, that's something that we generally pretty much agree on in America, Jody.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate your comments. And I think that very much so. And ideally one of these days we'll get around to changing the Electoral College so that we actually have the legal right to vote for President of the United States. At the moment, according to Bush v. Gore, we don't. And therefore, the court can step in and say, well, you know, the people's will is not being thwarted because we're going to change the outcome of this election because the people don't have a right to vote. And that was the basis of it, of that decision. And here's the ultimate irony. I mentioned this thing on the air yesterday. I said, you know, and Paul Begala on Crossfire, you know, he'd say, well, Gore really won the election. And I'm like, oh, come on, get over it. You know, give me a break. And it was in the New York Times. It was in the New York Times, you know, but it was after 9/11. And the New York Times downplayed it. And because they, as Hal Raines, I believe it was, said later that they didn't want to cause discord when at a time of national crisis. And somebody posted on our message board, come on, you know, prove this. Give me the thing. And I expected somebody just to go to the New York Times and pull it out. And it didn't. We went through 15, 20 messages were posted and people were talking about it. So this morning I went and found it. And here it is. It was published on the 12th of November, 2001. So this was just a month and a day after 9/11. Examining the vote, the overview. And let me just quote you a couple of sentences from the New York Times, an article here from the National Desk by Ford Fessenden and John Broder. Under the strategy that Mr. Gore pursued at the beginning of the Florida standoff, filing suit to force hand recounts in only four predominantly Democratic counties, Mr. Bush would have kept his lead. See, this is where Gore blew it early on. And that's why Gore started saying, make every vote count, because they wanted to recount the entire state. But the consortium, this is all this whole group of newspapers who paid to count every single vote for the entire state. Looking at a broader group of rejected ballots than those covered in the court decisions, 175,010 in all, found that Mr. Gore might have won, if the courts had ordered a full statewide recount of all the rejected ballots. The findings indicate that Mr. Gore might have eked out a victory if he had pursued a course in court like the one he publicly advocated when he called on the state to count all the votes. And then they go on to say, the numbers reveal the flaws in Mr. Gore's post-election tactics, and in retrospect, why the Bush strategy of resisting county-by-county recounts was ultimately successful. In a finding rich with irony, the results show that even if Mr. Gore had succeeded in his effort to force recounts of undervotes in four Democratic counties, he would still have lost. An approach Mr. Gore and his lawyer rejected as impractical, a statewide recount, would have produced enough votes to tilt the election his way, no matter what standard was chosen to judge voter intent. So, and they go through the actual count in here. If all the ballots had been reviewed under any of seven single standards and combined with the results of an examination of overvotes, Mr. Gore would have won by a very narrow margin. And then they go on to say, another complicating factor, keep in mind, Bush won this thing by only 537 votes according to the official count that was stopped by the Supreme Court. Another complicating factor in the effort to untangle the result is the overseas absentee ballots that arrived after Election Day. A New York Times investigation earlier this year showed that 680 of the late arriving ballots did not meet Florida's standards, yet were still counted. The vast majority of those flawed ballots were accepted in counties that favored Mr. Bush after an aggressive effort by Bush strategists to pressure officials to accept them. A statistical analysis conducted for the New York Times determined that if all counties had followed state law in reviewing the absentee ballots, Mr. Gore would have picked up as many as 290 additional votes, enough to tip the election in Mr. Gore's favor. Mr. Gore chose not to challenge those ballots because many were from members of the military overseas, and Mr. Gore did not want to be accused of seeking to invalidate votes of men and women in uniform. And what's so ironic about this is that just a week or two ago, I heard a right-wing, one of these right-wing hosts talking about how Gore had tried to disenfranchise the military personnel in the 2000 election. And it's the level I'm at a loss for words. Absurdity, strangeness, very, very, very strange stuff. So anyhow, the reality is, yes, Al Gore actually did get more votes than George Bush did in Florida, actually did win the count. If you look statewide, but the official count was stopped by the Supreme Court before every vote was counted, and therefore we have George Bush. But the point where I was going with all this, pardon the digression, but it's so important, I think, to put this stuff on the record. It's incredible how the cons are constantly trying to rewrite history. We had enormous prosperity under Ronald Reagan. We had a recession under Reagan as a result of his tax cut. And Reagan never raised taxes. Reagan cut taxes one year and raised taxes in the following six consecutive years, followed by George Bush Sr., who not only gave us a recession, but also gave us a huge tax increase. And he's constant, you know, this constant drumbeat of rewriting history. Oh, everybody knows that even in the recount that was done by the newspapers, Bush won. No, the recount done by the newspapers, Gore won. And I think it's important to keep history accurate, even in the face of the conservatives who want to try to convince you that there's some alternative universe out there. And it's like this So anyhow, with California, what's going to happen in California? Is the Supreme Court going to say, as Jody correctly pointed out from Arlington Heights, is the Supreme Court going to say, well, you know, that decision was just to install George Bush as president and stop the vote in Florida so that the will of the people would not be counted because the people don't have the right to vote for president in Florida because we have an electoral college and therefore people in the United States don't have a right to vote. That's essentially what they said. And are they going to say, so we're not going to use any of the standards that we use to install George Bush to help out George Bush. We're not going to use any of those standards to help out Gray Davis. Because George Bush is our guy and Gray Davis ain't. Are they going to say that? Is that what's going to happen with the cons on this Supreme Court? I tell you, the conservatives in California are all knotted up. They are so upset about this. How dare those liberals on the Ninth Circuit? It's what's good for the goose is good for the gander, my friends. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out, and what it's going to mean. You know, what it's going to mean for American democracy, and what it's going to mean for the future of the electoral process in the United States. I mean, we're at a real turning point in many regards here right now. I'm here in Vermont, and I'm fascinated. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel6.com. Next time you're goofing around on the internet, you know, in other words, the next time you're at work, click on over to Motel6.com for Click 6 Web Bargains. Those are special discounts at hundreds of locations that you can only get when you book online. Just look for the Click 6 icon at Motel6.com and then get back to work. I'm Tom Baudet, and we'll leave the light and the modem on for you. And a core hotel.
One ringy dingy. Oh, is this the party to whom I am speaking? Ernestine Tomlin here, WebEx Communications visionary. I want to tell you about the new ringy dingy, online meetings from WebEx. With WebEx, you share real-time voice, video, and data all through your browser. It's the world's richest web conferencing experience. Use WebEx and kick your competition in the tush. Visit me today at WebEx.com. I have something to show you.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
She is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Banjila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Banjila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed. In some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
And they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn the world into one big Texas. Turn the world into one big Texas.
And welcome back, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. It's Tom Hartman. Mike Levitt, Utah. The hope here, frankly, for me, is that as these situations come to light, as people start to realize that there's this conservative power grab going on in America that's been going on ever since the late 1990s, with the attempt to evict Bill Clinton from the White House, then the theft of the election in 2000, then the redistricting attempts in Texas and a few other states, and now trying to take the California governorship. People are waking up and they're going, whoa, something's wrong here. Here's another one. The new EPA nominee, Mike Levitt, his family owned a fish farm that spread a disease called whirling disease. This is a disease that causes trout spines to deform so that the fish constantly swim in little circles chasing themselves. And his fish farm was cited by the environmental protection officials in the state of Utah for operating without a proper license and spreading a potentially deadly fish disease, whirling disease. They pled guilty to 8 counts and paid a $25,000 fine. This is the guy who's going to be the head of the EPA. Utah also tied for last place in enforcing the Clean Water Act. This guy who ran a bogus illegal fish farm is now going to be the head of our EPA. And then when he came into office, what did he do? When he became governor, he left the fish farm behind with his family. He came in to be a governor. And here, this is from the Associated Press, an article by Robert Gehrke. EPA nominee faces questions about records. Shortly after Levitt took office, there was a major reorganization of the state agency in charge of wildlife oversight. Dozens of officials were fired, demoted, or left. They included investigators and biologists whose work had resulted in the Levitt's family being cited for operating a fish farm without a proper license and for potentially spreading a deadly fish disease. In other words, he came into office and he got revenge. Oh, my. It is incredible, the people that George Bush pulls out of the hat. I'm sure that Levitt is, like most of the other people high up in the Bush administration, so, you know, one of his pioneers, one of the people who raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for him. The good news in this is that as these outrageous and egregious situations keep coming forward and being exposed, people are waking up and they're saying, no, we're not gonna go for this again. 2004, things are gonna change. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. Isabella's pounding North Carolina and Virginia with 90 to 110 mile an hour winds and heavy rain. Don Dornberg reports.
I'm at Atlantic, North Carolina, just south of where Hurricane Isabella is coming ashore. The winds are 50 to 60 miles an hour with a driving rain. We have seen no significant structural damage, but a lot of tree limbs are down and power's out for several thousand people. We saw virtually no cars coming up US 70 from Moorhead City. People are pretty much hunkering down, waiting for Hurricane Isabel to pass. Reporting from Atlantic, North Carolina, I'm Don Dornberg.
Today's a bad day for air travelers on the East Coast. Air traffic expert Ralika Paris of Travelocity says flight schedules have been decimated by Hurricane Isabel.
From New York's LaGuardia, New Jersey's Newark Liberty Airport, all the way down into the Washington metropolitan area and down all this, as far south as Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, we've seen approximately 1,000 flights canceled into those major airports.
Paris says flights in the New York City area are delayed by as much as 3 hours. President Bush does not expect the U.N. Security Council to approve a new resolution on Iraq before he addresses the U.N. General Assembly Tuesday. The U.S. wants a new resolution authorizing a multinational force to help secure post-war Iraq. The U.S. also wants more financial contributions from other nations. The president cites good progress in Iraq despite rising casualties and costs.
That businesses are beginning to flourish, hospitals are open, pregnant women are receiving medicines. Young children are getting vaccinated. I mean, there's case after case after case where life is improving for the average Iraqi citizen.
This week, the president formally asked Congress for an additional $87 billion for post-war Iraq. The U.S. military says two soldiers have been wounded in an attack in a convoy in Iraq. The convoy was attacked west of Baghdad today, and witnesses are reporting several casualties. More in a moment.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking... you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
New unemployment claims have dipped below the psychologically crucial 400,000 mark in the government's latest report. For the week ending September 13th, a total of 399,000 people filed first-time unemployment claims. That's about 29,000 fewer than filed the week before. The company that makes Windows operating software says there's yet another internet virus out there that could let hackers control your computer. Microsoft says the virus can run on Windows NT 4.0, 2000, XP, and Server 2003. Wall Street. The Dow is up 69 points. The Nasdaq has gained nearly 16. More after this.
One of the reasons people give for not buying LoJack is where they live.
But that has little to do with whether your car will be stolen. It's where you drive. Do you drive to work, to a mall, to the city? That's why you need LoJack. Nationally, stolen vehicles that have LoJack are recovered over 90% of the time. And LoJack guarantees they'll recover your vehicle within 24 hours after you report it stolen to the police, or LoJack will reimburse you the cost of your LoJack system. See your car dealer or LoJack.com.
Doctors have said the odds of giving birth to two sets of identical twins were probably about 1 in 10 million, but that's exactly what 18-year-old Amanda Davis of McKinney, Texas did at Baylor Medical Center in Dallas. After giving birth to one set of boys and one set of girls, Amanda became very concerned over her new family's future. Now the first-time mom has another reason to smile with help pouring in from all over the world.
Yes, I thought after I had the babies, maybe my story would be in the McKinney paper, and that's it. I didn't know it would go worldwide, and I'd get an apartment and furniture and all that stuff.
To further help Davis and her family, a property management company has given her the use of an apartment rent-free for up to a year. Bourbon lovers will be descending on Bardstown, Kentucky this week. The Kentucky Bourbon Festival is underway in the bourbon capital of the world. The festival will include bourbon cooking schools, a bourbon breakfast, bourbon barrel relays, a barbecue cook-off, a 5K run, and a balloon glow. Distilleries will be open for tours. I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Bayonets ready! Take aim and fire! No, you're not in a World War I time warp. You're changing your glove compartment bulb. When I come back, I'll tell you how to hit the bullseye. In today's world of discord and disappointment, one thing's for sure. Car cover owners are so satisfied, they buy their car covers all over again. Think car covers are a hassle? No. Research shows owners find covers easy to put on and take off. Are all covers the same? No. The standard in car cover fabric is Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't let sun and dust damage your car. Kimberly Clark's Blockit fabric's got you covered. That's Blockit by Kimberly Clark. Don't get up in arms about burned out glove compartment bulbs. You can relight the way in these easy steps. With protected hand, grab your bayonet. Bayonet bulb, that is. This little light is so called because of the protrusion at its base that receives electrical current. Now push in slightly and turn counterclockwise to remove. To install new bulb, line up bayonet with socket slot, ease in, and turn clockwise. Now relax. You've won the battle of the bulb without a single casualty. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Can you hear me over that? Okay, thank you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Fire has erupted on a large oil pipeline in northern Iraq. Television pictures show thick black smoke pouring from the damaged pipeline located about 200 kilometers north of Baghdad near the town of Bajij. Meanwhile, people in the central town of Fallujah say U.S. soldiers have killed a 14-year-old boy and wounded at least four other people. Witnesses say the soldiers opened fire late Wednesday when their convoy drove near a wedding celebration where shots were being fired into the air. And there are those who are speculating that this pipeline explosion in Iraq is a revenge attack for the way that American soldiers are being perceived as, you know, as being occupiers, essentially. Our guest this hour is Paul Sperry. He wrote an extraordinary, he's the Washington bureau chief of WorldNetDaily.com. Wrote a book called Crude Politics, How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. And, Paul, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. No Paul. Is somebody running the... Say what? Okay, Paul?
Yep.
Hey, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you today?
Pretty good.
Sorry about the confusion there. I was just saying, you're the Washington Bureau Chief at WorldNetDaily.com, which is generally regarded as a conservative website, right?
Yes, it is. I would argue that we're... if we have an agenda, it's two parts. One being watchdogs on government and making sure that Washington lives within the Constitution.
Well, that's a plan I can agree with. And you're a Hoover Institution media fellow. You report on national security issues that have been picked up by virtually every major news agency in the world. You're the author of the new book, Crude Politics: How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. I was reading this, and I thought, just in the introduction here, that George W. Bush, President and Commander-in-Chief of the United States, a former Texas oil executive, he received more donations from the oil and gas industry in the 2000 campaign than any other federal candidate over the previous decade close to the Saudi royal family. Then Dick Cheney headed the White House Energy Task Force, Halliburton Company, and is the advisor to the U.S. Azerbaijan Chamber of Commerce, and a member of the Kazakhstan Oil Advisory Board. Condoleezza Rice, longtime director of Chevron Corp, now Chevron Texaco, the Caspian Sea's largest energy producer, has an oil tanker named after her. And then, is it Khalilzad?
His name is pronounced Khalilzad, although it's spelled K-H, but yeah. It's pronounced Khalilzad.
Okay, Khalilzad.
Not exactly a household name, even here in Washington, but very highly influential.
Right, and you have him listed as a one-time consultant to Unocal Corp, and then you got Richard Armitage, who's the former who worked, you know, as a lobbyist with Caspian Oil clients, and was the former co-chairman of the U.S. Azerbaijan Chamber of Commerce. There it is again, and then Hamid Karzai, who of course is the president of Afghanistan now, one-time Unocal consultant. What do these people all have in common? What's going on here?
A big oil. They're ties to the oil industry. In fact, the Bush and many of his war advisors worked in the oil patch or lobbied for clients in the oil patch. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean, they were exercising a secret oil agenda in this war, nor does it just because Bush and Cheney took more money donations from the oil and gas industry than any other politician over the last decade doesn't mean that either. But, you know, and I was skeptical at first because I knew about some of this, the full nexus in the oil patch I did not know of until I started investigating. But to make any sense of the administration's war strategy, you have to follow the oil. It really is that simple, although how they've gone about it is quite complicated, as I detail in Crude Politics. And I mean, the political and corporate connections alone are fascinating.
Yeah, so well, let's, you know, there's a certain level of complexity that in reading through the book, there are areas where I would have to stop and go back. I mean, because you get layers within layers here, and we can't go too deep in a, you know, in just a conversation, a radio program, but just broadly in overview, this isn't just about Iraq and the Iraq oil, which everybody, not everybody, but I mean, there was this thing just a month or two ago, Judicial Watch, you know, Larry Klayman won his lawsuit or a little piece of it against Dick Cheney to get the papers pried out of the first energy meeting, Energy Task Force meeting, before 9/11. And the documents are on the Judicial Watch website. And what they were doing was carving up Iraq, and they had a list of companies and nations that might want to buy the oil from Iraq. And they had named these oil fields, and they had carved up the unexplored regions and all this sort of stuff. So they were clearly, I mean, if they were carving up Iraq before 9/11 and figuring out who was going to buy its oil, they were thinking about that. But you're suggesting that this goes back even before the Iraq invasion, that this has to do with Afghanistan as well.
Right. You can't even, you really can't talk about Iraq without first talking about Afghanistan. What they both have in common is regime change. And Crude Politics explains, well, it covers a lot of ground. It explains why Osama bin Laden is still a threat to America 2 years after Bush vowed to capture him dead or alive, why Bush continues to appease Pakistan, where bin Laden is hiding.
Well, let's just address those questions. Why? Well, let's take those questions rather than just, you know, leaving them dangling there for
us. Well, the reason that he is still at large, free to attack us,
He being Osama bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden is because this administration focused on regime change, something that you recall candidate Bush considered a dirty word. But regime change first in Kabul and now in Baghdad, and that expanded overambitious mission has diverted resources from the hunt for bin Laden, and those resources come in the form of troops, intelligence assets, Arabic translators, which are key to capturing bin Laden, gathering that type of human intelligence that Arabic translators can offer. And also, of course, money. Now we're finding that the president is now asking taxpayers for another $21 billion, my sources tell me, for additional Iraqi reconstruction contracts. That's in addition to the $7 billion contract over 5 years that Halliburton was awarded in a no-bid, no-competitive-bid arrangement before the war ever started.
And a guaranteed profit, by the way.
What's that?
And a guaranteed profit. They were guaranteed a profit. You know, it was a cost-plus.
Right, a cost-plus arrangement.
Yeah. Pardon my interrupting you.
But the underlying reason that they focused on regime change is because it lifted U.N. sanctions on U.S. oil investment in Afghanistan and Iraq. And going back to Afghanistan, and by the way, people don't know this, but in the name of fighting the war on terrorism, this administration has quietly lifted sanctions on U.S. oil investment in Azerbaijan, which is a big Caspian producer, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and now Iraq. But for starters, Bush dusted off a plan for toppling the Taliban, written before 9/11 by an old Bush hand with ties to the oil industry, and that's this fellow Khalilzad. Zalmay is his first name. The president calls him Zal. And he's a behind-the-scenes operator.
The president of the United States calls him Zal.
The president calls him Zal. He's okay. An old Bush hand, and he is very influential. He's the president's top advisor in Afghanistan and Iraq. But he's not a front guy. He's a guy that didn't go through the position that he's been appointed to in the White House. Is not one that required Senate confirmation, so they didn't have to drag his background through the media. But his Afghan plan centered around what quote valuable energy corridor, as he called it, linking Caspian reserves to hot Asian markets through Afghanistan and Pakistan. And the Taliban had been blocking those very profitable export routes that had long been on the wish list of Chevron and other big Bush donors. Chevron, of course, is Condoleezza Rice's old firm. She was
right. So let's get this straight now. This goes back long before 9/11. This goes back long before George Bush being president. We're talking about oil industry, large, big oil companies. Putting together deals around the Caspian Sea, which most people, I think, don't realize is actually kind of a giant lake, right? It's not
landlocked.
Okay. And so to get oil,
by all the icky stands, as I call them, Kazakhstan,
right, and because I've had people say to me, well, yeah, I've mentioned to people, well, they want to build these pipelines across Afghanistan to get the Caspian Sea oil out, and they're like, well, why don't they just take it out by boat? And you know, people don't, they should call it the Caspian Lake, you know, because it's a very big lake. But
well,
anyway,
me just explain briefly to your listeners that the Caspian reserves, which rival Saudi Arabia, I mean, we're talking nearly $4 trillion worth of money in there locked up in natural gas and oil. It's very cheap, by the way, to produce $3 a barrel on average, compared to $10 of drilling costs here in the U.S. So it's where you want to be, where a lot of the U.S. producers want to be. Well, that fortune is essentially worthless unless you can move it out of there and export it. And to do that, you need pipelines, and pipelines there have predominantly gone from the east to the west. Through Russia and then recently through out to the Mediterranean. But to get them to faster-growing markets, energy-hungry markets of Asia, you'd have to tanker, put them on tankers, bring it down the Red Sea, out the Mediterranean to the Red Sea, and then out the Indian Ocean and onto Asia, which is just cost-prohibitive. So what the big producers that are invested there, by the way, Chevron's the biggest investor, in the Caspian. They've wanted for years is to have a nice to have pipelines drop straight south through Afghanistan and Pakistan out to the ocean or onto India, which is very hungry for cheap gas. Shorter route, of course, would be through Iran, but UN and U.S. sanctions foreclosed that option to investors. So these pipelines have been on the books for years. The problem is the Taliban has been blocking them. And Bush adopted Zal's plan right down to installing himself as Afghan envoy to broker the regime change in Kabul and install Hamid Karzai, who, by the way, also worked in these pipelines with Khalil Saad and UNIKEL in the 90s, and also even adopted his plan to lift the Pressler Amendment and other sanctions on Pakistan to get them on board the pipelines, which I detail in Crude Politics.
Remarkable stuff. We're talking with Paul Sperry, the author of Crude Politics, an extraordinary new book. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Paul, hang on. We've got to take a break here. We'll come back. If you have questions for Paul, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Presenting the new
Radio Shack MasterCard credit card. With a 9.9% APR for purchases and a 0% introductory APR for balance transfers. It's a cool card that helps you earn reward points toward cool stuff, like a complete home digital imaging system. Plus, earn reward points everywhere and get double points at participating Radio Shack stores.
Apply now at
Radio Shack. For information about rates, fees, features, and benefits associated with use of this credit card, see a Radio Shack store associate for details.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, no.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes,
Yes, I'm calling about the Michael Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Paul Sperry, the author of Crude Politics, subtitled How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. And, Paul, you were telling us how there's all this oil in the Stan region, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Afghanistan, in these countries. And there's no way to get it out by water. The Caspian Sea is landlocked. It's in fact, it's not even particularly deep, as I recall. It's kind of a swamp, salty, you know, like the salt, Great Salt Lake. And so there have been these plans on the books for years and years, mostly by Chevron and the other big oil companies, to build an oil pipeline or a natural gas pipeline or both across Afghanistan. And yes. I remember reading
something. Both, in fact, crude and natural gas. And, yes, you do need export lines in the form of pipelines to get it out of there.
Right. And to get it down to the Arabian Sea or get it over to Delhi. And I'm looking at the map. There's a great map in your book. I recommend this book to people real highly. And I remember reading something sometime back about you can have a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. Is that quote familiar to you?
Yeah, I think that was, refresh my memory.
Well, I don't have the quote in front of me. I should have gone and dug it up. My recollection was that in the late 90s, that one of the people who is now currently associated with the Bush administration had made that remark to the Taliban, that they could either participate and get the and my recollection was that it was somebody working with Cheney, but I don't have it right in front of me, so I don't want to go on the nail it down for sure.
Could you possibly be referring to the quote of a Pakistani diplomat who made that in a meeting of diplomats over in Europe, and it was quoted by one of these French journalists who wrote the book, where they're promulgating the conspiracy theory that Bush provoked the attack so that he would have a pretext to go in and clear the way for these pipelines.
It may be. I haven't read that book, and I'm not one who subscribes to that conspiracy theory.
I think that's where I've heard it. And,
okay.
And I looked at that charge, and it's easy to refute for the simple reason that the FBI documents I looked at show that. And the immigration documents show that Mohammed Atta entered the U.S. in June of 2000. Next month, he was in Florida taking pilot lessons for the plot. So the plot was already in the works. So I don't think that Bush even got in office.
I think we can agree that 9/11 was an opportunity.
It doesn't make any sense, but I look. But Bush was just as shocked as the rest of us on 9/11. But when the shock wore off, and he and the war advisors, the principals gathered around the Situation Room, when they realized they had a golden opportunity to open up new oil frontiers, not just for this country, but their former clients and their former employers, and their donors, particularly, but. Most have worked on or lobbied for oil companies with interest in the Caspian and the Middle East, and they got ambitious. Some might say greedy, and opted for the broader plan of not just getting bin Laden, but carrying out regime change, which would remove UN sanctions blocking oil deals there.
Yeah. And rewriting the geopolitics of the entire region.
Yeah, but the real scandal here is that they got their UN sanctions lifted on investment in those countries, and they're getting their oil deals, this natural gas part of the Ilzad division of
and now they're moving along. Paul, I've got to ask you to hold that thought there, because this music means we've got to take a break, but we will have a little longer time to talk after this break. This was just a short segment. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network with Paul Sperry.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
The trains will not run on time come October 3rd if six unions at Amtrak have their way. The one-day walkout's being planned to protest congressional inaction on funding for the next fiscal year, which starts next month. The rail service has asked for $1.8 billion of federal support. So far, a Senate committee has recommended $1.3 billion. The unions represent some 8,000 people, nearly 40% of Amtrak's total workforce. Amtrak's lawyers are preparing to file for an injunction in federal court in hopes of stopping the strike.
The Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride kicks off this weekend as caravans prepare to depart from 9 American cities to converge on Washington, D.C. early next month. The ride hopes to draw attention to the 29 million immigrants whose labor adds about $10 billion a year to the U.S. economy. Richard Shaw is helping to organize the Houston to Washington, D.C. leg of the Freedom Ride, which he says has three major demands.
We need in this country for undocumented immigrants a legalization and a road to citizenship. Secondly, we need some family reunification laws that will allow immigrants to reunite with their families, and these issues cut across the lines of many immigrant groups. And thirdly, we want strong laws in place that guarantee the right of immigrants in the workplace.
The Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride is modeled after the Freedom Rides of the 1960s, which helped bring legal segregation in the South to a conclusion.
Tough times for the tobacco industry. On Wednesday, R.J. Reynolds announced plans to lay off 2,400 employees. That's 40% of the company. RJR blames a cigarette industry price war for decimating its bottom line and says it will rely more heavily on its parent company, Nabisco, for corporate support services once the downsizing is complete.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities like Ted Nugent.
Everybody's got to learn to support hunting, fishing, and trapping, because that's where the dollars come from to save habitat.
You know, every time he gets done talking, I feel like I should say amen.
But because I live the truth. That's what my book, God, Guns, and Rock and Roll, it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It sounds like I'm bragging because I am.
I love the book, Ted.
Thank you. It's like we're at a damn campfire, isn't it?
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Here they come again. Catch us if you can. Try to get a move on.
going all of our life. Catch us if you can.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Paul Sperry, Washington Bureau Chief of WorldNetDaily.com. He's the author of an extraordinary new book called Crude Politics, How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. And, Paul, your bottom line assertion here, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but is basically that Bush and Cheney, a couple of oil industry executives, and Condi Rice, who worked for Chevron and has a tanker named after her, and others in his administration, have turned this golden opportunity of a terrorist attack on the United States into an opportunity to seize on behalf of, on the one hand, you could say, you know, for the benefit of the United States, so that we can have our SUVs and get our oil, too. You know, to George Bush Sr.'s famous statement that the American lifestyle is not negotiable, to secure the oil security of the United States, but also to make some serious profits, have taken this war on terrorism into basically a regional war with very specific agendas that have to do with acquiring oil. Is that a snapshot?
Yeah, 9/11 was a golden opportunity to take out bin Laden in southern Afghanistan there, where we had a rare beat on him. I mean, he was still using his satellite phone, and we were drawing signals on him, signals intelligence, and we had him basically cornered if we wanted to, and we focused instead on regime change, removing the Taliban and bringing in the Northern Alliance and focusing on getting the Silk Road built. And by the way, as I detail in Crude Politics, Bush sent his top diplomat in Pakistan to meet with President Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, with his oil minister over the pipeline just 2 days after the U.S. forces began bombing Afghanistan. By the way, that same diplomat, one of the many old Bush hands, is now working on reconstruction projects in Iraq. And, you know, this was why we, you know, the dust hadn't even settled on Ground Zero. We were all still reeling from the shock of that awful, horrible day and that tragedy, and here they're meeting already on the oil pipelines. And then a week after that, GOP, this Republican Senator Sam Brownback, who's head of a powerful committee on Capitol Hill, starts the Silk Road Caucus. And Sam Brownback is a prominent player in my book because he's the go-to guy on Capitol Hill to get all these sanctions lifted for the administration and their donors. He comes through time and time again, including lifting sanctions to Section 907 in Azerbaijan, something that Rich Armitage, the Deputy Secretary of State, which is appointee there, had lobbied for his clients before coming into this White House, and also lifting sanctions in Pakistan to help get this Silk Road built. And then we took our eye off of bin Laden even more so. This president decided to carry out regime change in Iraq, as in now we have the president confessing yesterday that, lo and behold, Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11.
Why do you think he said that? Do you think it was just like just burped out of his mouth without? Because I mean, just the day before, or 2 days before, what's her name? Condi had been trying to link the two together. On Sunday, we had Cheney on TV trying to weave the two together, and then Bush just lets this thing out. Well,
no,
how come?
No. It's the cause and effect is that the media in this town is finally asking these officials such as Cheney and Rice and the president himself and Rumsfeld they're challenging them on their bald assertions and actually asking them to define their terms and things they should have
done. But Bush was the first one who told the truth. I mean, why did he do that when he did it?
Who?
George Bush. You know,
well,
George Bush,
because he was asked before, you recall, before the war and even in recent weeks, the president has continued to suggest that there was a linkage. And then now the media is finally just not putting it out there unfiltered. They're actually going back and say, wait a minute.
Interesting.
Cheney is now saying on Meet the Press that there was some connection. And then they went to Rumsfeld because Russert didn't follow up. And when they had Rumsfeld in a press conference, they said, hey, what's the deal? Do you think there's a connection to 9/11, a solid connection? No, and then they went to Bush when they had an opportunity to quiz him in another photo op that he was doing, and he had to say no. But see, nobody actually challenged this any of these guys before the war. They never asked them point blank. Wait a minute, what's the linkage? What's the proof? Show it to us.
I'm just curious why
it said no. There was no link. By the way, the dossier in Iraq actually said it. The intelligence community said there was no evidence of a link. In fact, they said that there wasn't even a pre-existing relationship with al-Qaeda at all. And the and this president went and ignored his own intelligence and went out to the American people and said 180 degrees opposite and said, we got to go in and remove this threat to America because this guy's got weapons of mass destruction he can share with al-Qaeda, who he's in bed with.
And you have documented that this was to help out his oil cronies rather than to help America.
That's why I wrote Crude Politics, to let Americans see what the president and his war advisors have been doing behind the scenes of the war. While they've been publicly saying, oh, we've got al-Qaeda on the run, we're working 24-7, we're hunting them down one by one and asking for our patience and getting the kingpin bin Laden. But what they've been doing behind the scenes was busying themselves with a lot of oil deal making, war profiteering, for their former clients, board members, and donors, all in the name of fighting terrorism.
Yeah, it's pretty spooky. Paul Sperry is the author of Crude Politics, How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Paul, Kay in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line with a question for you. Kay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mr. Sperry, your title of your book is right on, Crude Politics. Would you agree with me that Americans' naivety is partly due to our general lack of understanding of geography and history? I just finished reading Daniel Yergin's The Prize. And when you go back to the history of oil, and then the history of capitalism and our corporate culture in this American society, you see how the control of oil, world oil, is what this administration is after. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think oil is the key. You can't understand what's going on here without looking through that prism. And I've had a lot of Bush supporters, and by the way, I voted for Bush in the interest of full disclosure. A number of them have said to me, and it's a pointed observation, so what if this administration opened up new oil frontiers for us in the Middle East and in Central Asia? Is that such a bad thing? Well, for starters, we're still vulnerable to attack from bin Laden and al-Qaeda thanks to the administration's hidden oil agenda. And what's more, the president misled us about the Iraqi threat and was not honest about his motives for regime change in both Iraq and Afghanistan, as it turns out. And he's driving us deeper and deeper into a part of the world that hates us. Rather than narrowly focusing on al-Qaeda and decapitating its leadership like my military sources had expected would be the strategy. And now we're facing a second Bush blowback, the first coming from his father's basing of troops in Saudi. This time they're based
which
in
was 9/11.
What's that?
Right. I mean, Osama bin Laden said in his demands before 9/11 that he was going to attack us if we didn't remove our troops from our bases in Saudi Arabia, and those troops were put there by George Bush Senior, by George Bush's father.
That's right.
So the first blowback was 9/11. You're saying
to babysit Saddam Hussein because he didn't finish the job of the first Gulf War. We had to station troops at Prince Sultan Air Force Base. Thousands of airmen were there, and that's not my analysis. That's from the FBI and the documents I've looked at. They've traced it back. And of course, it's no excuse for the mass murder in all this. Bin Laden's on this holy war thing, but the fact of the matter is we did base troops on holy Saudi soil. It's the home of Mecca and Medina, the holiest sites of Islam. But this time, our troops are being based in Iraq and Afghanistan indefinitely.
And
two other Muslim countries, and all the while they're sitting ducks.
That's right. But let me ask you another question. You used two important words recently. You said opportunity and motives. It seems to me that we're all concentrating too much on the small current motives of this administration and big oil, and we're not concentrating enough on the large overall future-oriented motives of this administration and big oil. And what I see in this whole scenario is that Cheney, Bush, and big oil are not so concerned with current events. They're more concerned with what their empire will look like three generations from now, and it will control the world if it continues on its present course.
Interesting, Kay. What do you think about that, Paul?
That may very well be the case. Now, I didn't get into that cosmic significance of this. I wanted to just stick to the facts, and that's what I do is connect a lot of dots that existed. It also added a bunch of new dots and tried to make sense of everything that was going on behind the scenes. And I don't really speculate on what the grand scheme is, but that may possibly be it. I mean,
It's John Rockefeller did the same thing. I mean, it's in many would say, and you read the histories, particularly those written in the 1920s and the 1930s of Rockefeller's rise to power and his business practices and his corruption of political leaders in particular. And, you know, after Ohio kicked him out and all the states went into the charter mongering era of the 1890s and all this stuff that happened, it's not dramatically all that different from what's going on today in some ways. It's more local, certainly. But 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Brian in New Hampshire has a question for you, Paul.
Hi, how are you? Paul, I think you're referring to the book by John Charles Brizard, The Forbidden Truth. U.S. Taliban secret oil diplomacy and the failed hunt for bin Laden. Yeah, it talks about the secret negotiation between February and August 2001 A.D. between the Bush administration and the Taliban. It refers to a July 17th meeting in Berlin. That's on page 42. The Pakistani representative Naiz Naik says that the small American delegation talked about using a military option against the Taliban to the Taliban representatives they were talking to, and they according to NIAC, one of the U.S. officials said, either you accept our offer of a carpet of gold or we bury you under a carpet of bombs. And
one of the U.S. officials. I was the one who had mentioned that, Brian, by the way, not Paul.
Yes. No, I know. And I'm saying that there was an implicit threat there, but it goes back to, it does go back to the Clinton administration, remember August 1998, after the African bombings of the embassy. He was trying to get bin Laden there. He had the two destroyers stationed off the coast of Pakistan for about a year or more, up until the Bush administration came into office. And I do believe...
Brian, do you have a question here to this?
Just one quick question would be, does he know anything about the at the attack on Tora Bora in late 2001, where a Pakistani black helicopter came in and allegedly took bin Laden out because they had captured bin Laden's personal cook? And the
you mean helped him escape, flew him out?
Yes.
Okay,
it was
great.
An old Russian
Brian?
Chopper, but it was Pakistani forces that flew him out.
Okay. Thanks, Brian, for the question. Your thoughts on that, Paul?
No, my sources tell me that and these are folks who did tours in Afghanistan, special ops, that the local Afghan proxy fighters we trusted there to actually do hunt bin Laden down in those White Mountains, in those caves. By the way, our special forces were very upset. They were told to take a back seat to these local Afghan Muslims and just call in bombing coordinates. Well, they actually did the hunting, and it turned out they betrayed us and helped bin Laden, his wives, and other al-Qaeda leaders escape across the border into northern Pakistan along this Pashtun tribal belt, where they remain today. They're hiding out there today. And instead of learning our lessons from that, this president has agreed to a bizarre arrangement with the Pakistani president, Musharraf, to not have our military step one foot in across the border and into Pakistan to join the hunt. He's relied on the Pakistani military to capture bin Laden, and we're doing the same thing. We're farming out our hunt for bin Laden to local Muslims again, this time in Pakistan, and they revere the guy. I mean, this is the guy that helped train and finance the jihadi fighters in Kashmir and take over all of Kashmir from India. And this
they're just giving us
this
a song
is number one
answer.
On the agenda, both domestic and foreign, for Islamabad.
Pardon me for interrupting, Paul, but
they have no interest in doing our bidding.
Pardon my interrupting, but we've got only 2 minutes left in the program, and we've got one more caller here. I wanted to get him in if we can. Robert, North Carolina, has a question for you. Robert?
Yeah, just to follow up on what the lady had said and expanding on the bigger picture, if the United States is going to stay viable over the long, long haul, we're going to have to confront the growing European Union, and France wants to make that a very powerful union, and China. And how do we do that except by controlling the oil and so on? Isn't that really what we're talking about here? And
yeah, might this not actually make some sense in some way? It's just unfortunate there wasn't a public debate about it, and nobody's talking about conservation. Robert, thank you. Paul, we've got about 30 seconds here. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the geopolitical strategy of, you know, opening up these oil frontiers, it just really doesn't wash when you look at all connections that behind the war planners that wanted.
So you think it's more about money than about the security and future of the United States?
It's a commercial front that they exploited. They used the 9/11, a tragedy, to exploit it for their own commercial gain. So I don't really buy into that notion that this was, you know, for geopolitical strategic reasons for America.
Paul Sperry, the author of Crude Politics. Paul, thank you very much for being with us today on the program.
My pleasure.
Crude Politics, How Bush's Oil Cronies Hijacked the War on Terrorism. And we'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel 6. I've noticed a lot of middle-aged corporate types on motorcycles trying to recapture a rebellious youth they never really had. They hit the highway like a bat out of accounting, but all they seem to be rebelling against is a full head of hair. But they can still call 1-800-4MOTEL6 for a place to rest and brush any dirt off their brand new leathers. I'm Tom, born to be mild Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. And a Core Hotel.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bear Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bear Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bear Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, Bartkop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart
he's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't
he? Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
Yeah, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
To your dreams. Our dreams for democracy in the United States of America. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson in Atlanta, Georgia, and engineered in Detroit by Steph Stryker and Steve Damschroeder. And just to let you know that, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. We still have a few minutes in the show, and Jim in Pennsylvania is on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, sir. I have a comment and yet a question. You know, okay, we're taking over.
We've got about 2 minutes here.
Okay, we got the oil so we can control it. But my point is, I don't think it's necessary to release it. It's to control the flow so that the price of oil stays high. Because they're making massive profits the higher the price of oil crude goes on the spot market.
Sure.
We don't want the price of crude to drop.
No, of course not.
See, and there's one point that Saddam Hussein made. He offered, when they were talking about the inspectors going back in, he said, look, I will release all the oil for you that you want.
And that's not what they wanted to hear.
No, no, no. We're the largest non-voting member of OPEC.
Right.
I'd like to, if anybody else has an idea on that.
Okay, Jim, thanks. I think that, and there's also Saddam was going to redenominate oil in euros, and there's a big concern about what that would do to the dollar. Some interesting stuff about the economy, actually, I was hoping to get into during the show today. We didn't have time. I'll get to it tomorrow. And some of our emails. Thanks, Bill. All the good info, Tom. It's getting scary out here, says Paul, one of the emails I got. When will the media challenge this fascist administration? They'll do anything to hold power, because if a Democratic administration takes over, there will be investigations and some will go to jail. I predict an October surprise next year. In what form, I don't know. War, martial law, stealing the election, who knows? Sad but true. Thanks again, Tom. Paul, I tell you, the good news here is the guy that I just had on, Paul Sperry, who wrote this book, Crude Politics, is a right-winger. He's a conservative. He writes for a conservative website. The word is getting out. People in America are waking up. There's a change coming. I'm telling you, there is a change coming in the United States. People are starting to say, hey, this hasn't worked. What might work? And the answer clearly is democracy. Democracy is what will work. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for being with us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America.